Welcome to the Let's Talk Business podcast. On each episode, we'll take a look at the businesses and people making headlines across the globe. We'll review books and analyze interviews from the leaders of the business world. The Let's Talk Business podcast looks for businesses, people, and ideas to invest in. I am Stephen Mayer, and I'm your host. For today's episode, we're going to talk about private equity in Asia. Private equity investment in Asia has exploded this century, and it has not been restricted to just China. We'll take a look at where the money is going, the conditions that have precipitated this trend, and where we expect it will head in the future. So let's get to it. For the decades that buyout funds have been around, private equity firms have focused most of their efforts and capital in the United States and European markets. United States and European funds have been so successful that there wasn't much of a desire for buyout firms to expand outside of their comfort zones. The economic turmoil, political instability, and barriers to entry had made the Asian markets unattractive for some time. However, emerging Asian markets have made it a hotspot for buyout funds since the Great Recession. The major players have entered the market in droves in the past decade, closing funds on par with some of the biggest European funds. Now, Blackstone recently closed its first Asia-focused fund in June 2018 with a hard cap of $2.3 billion. They were hardly the first on scene, however. The closing of the Blackstone Capital Partners Asia Fund signified the larger trend of private equity firms flooding the Asian markets this decade. Just a week later, the Carlyle Group closed a $6.55 billion fund. These come on the heels of KKR's 2017 fund, which raised a record for Asian funds of $9.3 billion in equity. According to research compiled by Bain & Company, 2017 ushered in a buyout boom in the Asia-Pacific markets. The year's record-high total debt deal value of $159 billion represented a 19% increase over the previous record year of 2015, and a greater than 150% increase since 2012. Research company Preqin confirmed that total private equity investment in Asia exceeded total investment in Europe for the first time in 2017. There are various reasons for the emergence of the Asian buyout markets. Overall economic improvement in the region, coupled with political stability, has curbed much of the downside risk that had plagued the markets and kept many investors away for decades. There are other factors at play here as well. The extended bull market and prosperous economy actually has a downside for US-based funds, as firms are raising larger and larger funds while the number of attractive target firms are dwindling. There just aren't that many undervalued companies in the United States at this point. They've already been tapped out. Funds have started to look overseas for enticing investment opportunities and have fixed their gazes on China, India, and Southeast Asia. Many Asian markets offer the tremendous upside that North America and Europe do not. Increased focus on technological improvements has resulted in expansion of Asian companies into the global economy. Vast segments of the Indian and Chinese populations are emerging from poverty each year, offering businesses millions of potential new customers. According to the World Bank, since the early 2000s, 162 million people have escaped poverty in India, while a similarly high number have escaped poverty in China. American private equity firms are racing to enter the markets before the good deals get scooped up by other firms. Low acquisition costs and great growth potential have many fund managers anticipating healthy returns for their Asian funds and investments. These low acquisition costs have allowed many fund managers to take risks and dabble in industries where they have had little prior experience. If their deal turns out to be a dud, the effect isn't too significant on the overall returns of the fund. If their deal turns out to be a home run, well, they're viewed as a visionary. There's always a maximum amount of money that can be lost on any one deal, but there is no maximum amount of money to gain. It is no shock that China is at the forefront of the private equity wave that is sweeping through Asia. Per data compiled by Bain & Company, China accounted for 45% of the total Asian deal value in 2017, The Chinese economy's emergence this century has clearly altered the world economic landscape. In the late 1970s, China instituted economic reforms that allowed for foreign investment in the country. And in the late 1980s to the early 1990s, the country privatized most of its state-controlled industries. Foreign investment has been flooding China's markets since then, but private equity funds had mostly stayed away. There were enough profitable deals and more certainty at home and in Europe to focus on. However, the Chinese economy kept growing, becoming the second largest in the world. Its government continued to create more favorable investing conditions through deregulation and improvements to its financial security institutions. By the early 2000s, conditions were ripe for a buyout boom. China's proposed Belt and Road Initiative also expects to have a major impact on the future of China's economy and its interconnectivity with the rest of the world. The Belt and Road Initiative is a massive infrastructure project that involves land and sea routes, linking China and Southeast Asia to European and African nations. This project will dramatically slash shipping costs and durations, and its effects could be felt by as many as 65% of the world's population. The project presents a wide variety of investment opportunities, including in the real estate, manufacturing, transportation, and raw material sectors. While the project is likely decades away from fruition, it does signal China's position in the global economy going forward. The eight largest Asian private equity funds are based in China, highlighting the industry's main focus in the region. However, it is not only American firms that are creating and closing funds. Chinese buyout firms have exploded in number as well. According to Brink News, the number of China-based buyout funds that closed from 2000 to 2004 was only 29. The number of buyout funds that have closed from the start of 2015 through June 2018 is a staggering 1,288, a 4,300% increase in only 15 years. These companies typically have a slightly better understanding of their home market and its consumer base. This has created stiff competition for private equity firms, who have started to look elsewhere to spend their hoards of cash. The thirst for deals in the Asian market is not only limited to China. Southeast Asian countries, particularly Vietnam, have joined India as a hotbed for private equity activity. While Vietnam is still a communist country, its government has announced plans to open up its economy through the privatization of many state-owned companies. KKR and Warburg Pincus have entered the Vietnamese market with large acquisitions in the past year, and other firms are poised to make splashes of their own by year-end. These firms are anticipating a China-like level of economic growth for Vietnam, albeit on a smaller scale. Private equity investments in Southeast Asia are covering a wide range of industries, highlighting the overall excitement in the region. The Managing Director and Chair of Portfolio Management for Baring Private Equity Asia, Cosmo Kayarakos, echoed this sentiment in a podcast earlier this year. He stated that his fund is sector agnostic, meaning his firm looks to assess a specific business before assessing its industry. And his firm is not the only one. Anna Fung, a principal for the Morgan Stanley Alternate Investment Partners Private Markets team, contrasts private equity investment in Asia with that in the US and Europe. In her quote, she says, "Something I should mention first is how Asia differs from the US and Europe. In particular, there are a lot of differences in sector specialization. In the US, you'll find a lot of private equity firms specializing in one sector only. In Asia right now, you'll see funds focused on healthcare, and you also see a lot of consumer-focused funds. But there aren't a lot of true specialists in the sense that you get in the US." Now, a couple of examples include KKR entering the ride-sharing market through an investment in the Indonesian company Gojek, and TPG, Texas Pacific Group, more than tripling its $150 million investment of Myanmar distillery in a sale only 2 years after acquisition. The deal values are much smaller than the typical American or European investments, but the rate of returns can be much higher. While private equity funding has poured into Asia, the remarkable growth experienced over the past decade will not continue indefinitely. Firms are sitting on at least $225 billion of dry powder, which is cash that has been committed to the fund but has not yet been invested. Investors have been so eager to contribute to Asian funds that some deal managers are unable to invest the cash quickly enough. Keep in mind that a dollar of investment in the United States and a dollar of investment in most Asian countries do not have the same value. And what I mean is, a $200 million investment in a U.S. company doesn't make news. $200 million investment in a Thai business boosts its markets. The result is that Americans are committing more cash than deal managers can realistically invest. It's a good problem to have, but it still represents a problem. We would expect that the Asian private equity markets will cool off at some point in the next few years. China's yearly economic expansion has dropped from 15 to 20% yearly earlier this century to around 6%. But long-term prospects remain very favorable. The sheer number of people and the rapid technological and economic improvements offer advantages that don't exist elsewhere in the world. The governments of these countries have also become much more accepting of private equity investments. They've worked towards relaxing leveraging regulations, making large quantities of credit more readily available. Even countries like Myanmar and Bangladesh have upside potential that, though improvements are occurring less quickly, firms are sure to exploit, especially if the Chinese and Indian markets begin to overheat. 60% of the world population lives on the continent, and millions are exiting poverty and entering the world economy each month. It's a market that has started to be tapped, but there's plenty of water left in the well. The focus of fund managers for the future will include maintaining high rates of returns for longer-held investments. Many managers had early success as the economies were experiencing double-digit yearly growth. However, as expansion has tapered off, they've been struggling to maintain favorable returns. The key will be to continue generating value with existing investments through additional acquisitions or improvement to the operations of the current business. It was easy to take advantage of undervalued companies in order to generate a quick profit for a while, but those days are numbered. Financial research company Preqin determined through a survey that the number one concern for fund managers in 2008 was extremely high deal valuations. So it's safe to say that the next two decades will serve to separate the skilled fund managers from the amateurs. So that wraps up this episode. Thanks for stopping by, and we'll see you next time.